On 100.1 FM, you are listening to KMXT Kodiak. It is your public radio station. Stay tuned for the news coming right up. There we go. Got to have the music. It is 12 o'clock and time for the KMXT Midday Report. Thank you for listening to KMXT on 100.1 FM. It is your public radio station. 35 degrees in Kodiak right now with a light rain, foggy mist going on here in the city. South of us, there may be more snow falling. We still have a winter weather advisory with high winds and a lot of snow, at least until 8 or so tonight.
Live from NPR News in Washington, I'm Lakshmi Singh. The Federal Reserve is raising interest rates again by another quarter percentage point. NPR's David Gura reports Fed Chair Jerome Powell says he and his colleagues remain committed to getting high inflation under control, and the U.S. banking system, he says, is sound and resilient.
Despite the tumult that followed the collapse of Silicon Valley Bank, the Federal Reserve decided to move forward with its fight against high inflation, stressing that getting it under control continues to be its number one priority. But Fed Chair Jerome Powell acknowledged there's a lot of uncertainty, and it's likely banks will be more conservative when it comes to lending. Fed policymakers say more rate hikes may be necessary. According to their latest projections, policymakers expect another increase, likely another quarter of a percentage point, by the end of the year. Although Powell emphasized, data will determine what the Fed does going forward. David Gura, NPR News, New York.
Ukrainian President Volodymyr Zelensky visited military positions near Bakhmut, the epicenter of fighting in eastern Ukraine. NPR's Eleanor Beardsley reports a frontline town has been the scene of the longest and bloodiest battle since Russia's invasion over a year ago.
Zelensky made an unannounced visit to the east, stopping in at a gas station to take selfies with surprised customers in the town of Kostyantynivka, some 18 miles from Bakhmut. In the same town, volunteers, including Ukrainian Orthodox priest Boris Kovalchuk, unloaded donated food from a truck to stock a shelter for civilians fleeing Bakhmut. He calls Zelensky's visit to the area a big morale boost. We are very grateful. The power is sharing the pain of the people, says Kovalchuk. The president always appears in the hot spots, and that's a positive factor for every citizen of this country. Eleanor Beardsley, NPR News, Kostyantynivka, Ukraine.
The security presence is getting bigger at Denver's East High School after another shooting, the second within weeks. Here's school superintendent Alex Moreto.
We will have two armed officers here at East until the end of the school year. We're looking forward to expanding that conversation to see how we can reestablish a relationship with presence at our schools, in particular our high schools.
Police say two administrators were patting down a student as part of a pre-existing security plan because of the juvenile's troubled history. They say a gun was never detected until today. Police say the student opened fire and fled. He allegedly shot two school staff, one critically. Last month, students staged a protest for more gun safety after one of their classmates was fatally shot near the school's campus. The Dow is down 530 points. You're listening to NPR News.
Ang NPR Balita ay hatid sa inyo ng Providence Kodiak Island Counseling Center. Para sa kaukulang impormasyon tungkol sa aming mga serbisyo, tumawag lamang sa 481-2400.
For KMXT, I'm Terry Haynes. Petro Marine Services, the parent company of the gas station chain Petro Express, has released more information on the issues with contaminated fuel that were reported over this past month at its local location near Safeway. The company's general manager, Russell Cooper, says they've isolated the issues to a few hours of March 4th during the city's tax-free day.
We pumped out the tank. We put brand new filters. We pumped it out, flushed it. We have put new filters on each dispenser, And again, we did this after the fact, obviously, but we've had no other issues.
Some drivers and mechanics reported finding an unknown fluid in gas tanks earlier this month. The contaminants had a metallic tint and caused car engines to shut off while driving. The company has agreed to pay for repairs associated with any damage to vehicles caused by the strange liquid. Cooper says the investigation is ongoing. The company has sent contaminated fuel samples to a Valdez-based lab for testing. Results will not be available until next month. There will be no commercial Togiak sacro herring fishery this spring. As KDLG's Izzy Ross reports, the market for the roe has dwindled for decades, making the remote fishery financially unfeasible.
Fish processors have indicated they will not buy Togiak herring this season, according to the Alaska Department of Fish and Game's Outlook, released on Monday. It's the first time there hasn't been a commercial fishery there in decades. That means over 57,000 tons of herring will go unharvested. Alaska's herring fisheries primarily target spawning fish to harvest sac roe, the eggs in the skein of the females. And Togiak's herring fishery was a big business in the late 1980s and early 90s. Japan is Alaska's main market for herring roe, and processors sold it to customers there at over $1,000 a ton. But as the market has declined, so has the price for herring. According to Fish and Game, over the last decade, it's fluctuated between $50 and $150 a ton. That makes it tough for the remote Togiak herring fishery to pencil out financially. The size of the commercial fleet in Togiak has shrunk as well. It used to comprise hundreds of vessels. But last year, no gillnetters fished, and just 8 purse seine vessels participated, hauling in less than a quarter of the available harvest. Togiak herring, meanwhile, are doing just fine. This spring's herring biomass is forecast to be over 300,000 tons, far above average. The department says that large forecast is mainly due to the survival of 2 age classes of herring. Most of the mature herring this year will be 6- and 7-year-old fish. Water temperatures in the southeastern Bering Sea and at the spawning grounds near Togiak influence when the herring spawn, and the department staff will still survey the biomass this spring. They use sea surface temperature models near Unalaska to predict the run timing. They also track the Bering Sea's ice coverage in February and March. This year, herring are expected to start spawning around Togiak on April 29th. While no commercial fishermen will be harvesting Togiak herring this spring, that doesn't affect the Dutch Harbor food and bait fishery to the south, which is allocated about 4,000 tons. In Dillingham, I'm Izzy Ross.
Southeast Alaska king salmon stocks are in a years-long slump. Fisheries across the region can expect further restrictions aimed at letting more kings return to spawn. But as KSTK's Sage Smiley reports, the region's commercial fishery manager says there is a slight upward trend showing across the region.
Like many other Chinook salmon runs in the state, southeasts have been declining for years. Troy Tinas manages the region's commercial salmon fisheries for the Alaska Department of Fish and Game.
And this is mostly attributed to the marine environment, whether that be near shore, the inside waters, or out in the ocean when they get out in the ocean. They've been experiencing poor survival. It's not a freshwater-related issue or necessarily a fishery harvest issue. It's just a survival in the marine environment.
But recent numbers are looking more promising. Tina says the northern panhandle is faring a bit better than the south. Although still considered poor, the Setuk and Alsek rivers and even the Chilkat near Haines are forecasted to have stronger runs than southern southeast this year.
In general, our forecasts for this upcoming year have been better than what they have been for the past several years. And that's the indication that we're seeing some better survivals out there. And hopefully that trend continues. And we start rebuilding these stocks up to a level where we don't have to take such severe restrictions and then again continue that rebuilding process to where we can start having some directed fisheries on these stocks again.
But even with the modest increase, the region's runs are still considered poor and fishing will be restricted for the time being. Tina says state managers have very few options to try and protect dwindling Chinook or king salmon stocks.
As far as management and energy goes for these stocks, the only thing we can do is try to reduce harvest, which we have been doing for a number of years, and that's been through emergency order actions and then actions that have been dictated through the stock concern action plans that were approved by the Board of Fisheries.
Quite a few fisheries harvest king salmon in Southeast, commercial fisheries like the troll, seine, and drift gillnet fisheries, as well as sport and subsistence fisheries.
All those fisheries have taken limitations, whether it's been in the case of the commercial fisheries, implement non-retention in the purse seine fishery, reducing in drift gillnet fishery, reducing area that's open, as well as time during the when the Chinook salmon are running. Same thing with the troll fishery. Troll fisheries probably have the largest closures in the winter troll fishery and the spring troll fisheries, with areas being severely restricted and time being cut. And then sport fisheries, there's been non-retention implemented in a number of areas around the terminal areas, especially around the terminal areas of these wild systems.
Tina says in some cases it's been a dramatic reduction, with allowable harvest as low as 5% of expected runs.
We've been doing about all we can do short of having a massive closures in all these fisheries. And those restrictions that we have been taking in recent years have been very effective in reducing the harvest rates on these stock.
In the sport fishery, much of the inside passage from Ketchikan to Skagway has strict non-retention measures in place until mid-summer, except in very limited hatchery areas. Tina says those measures will continue this year, retention limits, time and area limits, pretty much everything Fish and Game has been doing to try and protect Southeast kings.
This isn't, you know, just Southeast. We've seen Chinook salmon stocks up and down the coast have been in a state of decline. But in Southeast, it's from one end of Southeast to the top end, where we have stock concern listing for the Unic River, for the Stikine River, for Andrews Creek and Taku River and Chilkat, as well as the King Salmon River.
Fish and Game won't set an all-year King Salmon harvest limit until April. In Wrangell, I'm Sage Smiley.
Southeast Alaska's sea otters were driven to near extinction by the fur trade in the early 20th century. But since they were reintroduced to the region in the 1960s, their numbers have grown considerably. Sea otters are a keystone species, protecting vital kelp beds. But they also prey on crab and clams that make up lucrative fisheries. They're protected by federal law, and only certain Alaska Native people can hunt them. But as otter populations have grown, so have calls to loosen the strict federal rules protecting them. And KRBD's Reagan Miller reports that has some people concerned.
Christy Ruby stands in her studio on the north end of Ketchikan next to a table piled high with soft blue, red, and purple sea otter pelts. These are her best-selling colored sea otter, and since 2017, she's used the dyed fur in her traditional handicrafts.
I use them sparingly because it costs twice or three times as much to have them dyed that color.
She says the rich colors are what make her creations unique. She's grateful for her ability to hunt the animals. But Ruby worries that efforts to reform sea otter management could jeopardize her business and traditional creations. To be clear, scientists aren't sure that otters are overpopulated in Southeast Alaska. There are now more than 25,000 spread throughout the panhandle, and one 2019 study estimated that the region's ecosystems could support three times as many. But that hasn't stopped efforts to reduce their numbers. Ketchikan's Borough Assembly recently took the topic to lawmakers in Washington, D.C., and asked for control of the federally managed species to be turned over to the state, or for current regulations to change. It's not the first time the issue has come up. Petersburg's Assembly called for higher harvests in 2018. The late Congressman Don Young attempted to make it easier to sell intact hides. Proponents say that increasing sea otter hunting would help bolster lucrative shellfish fisheries. But Ruby says those changes won't fix the problem, at least not without putting her traditional work at risk. She says state control of otter hunting could result in more red tape, preventing her from creating her work.
The state will get funding, and they'll have areas where they'll close off. Even natives won't be able to hunt that area because they say there's lack of otters there, which, you know, you cannot track an otter. They move all the time.
She's worried about allowing non-native hunters to kill sea otters. That's against the law under the 1972 Marine Mammal Protection Act. If the rules are relaxed, Ruby says she thinks hunters will flood the market with hides and lower the value of their traditional work she creates.
They'll turn them into coats and all this stuff that they want to do. And our crafts will be gone because we don't have the ability to pay that much money for what the hunters will get for that hide.
She's also worried about backlash. If sea otter pelts become a widely traded commercial commodity, she says she's concerned that could spark calls for hunting to be banned outright. Will Ware, a Tlingit artist who lives in Petersburg, also opposes opening sea otter hunts to non-native people. He says there are simpler solutions, starting with the Marine Mammal Protection Act itself. The law currently requires hunters to be at least 1/4 coastal Alaska Native by blood quantum. He says he'd like to allow any enrolled tribal member to hunt.
I think you would see a lot more otters being harvested each year. That would be low-hanging fruit that would immediately make a difference.
Weir also thinks that the rule should change to allow the exportation of tanned hides and handicrafts to Canada. Neither is currently allowed under federal law. He says Tlingit and Haida people have been sending goods through that route for years. Jeremiah James, an artist based in Yakutat, also has an issue with marketing laws. Some of his pieces have sold for around $1,000, but he can't reach a wider market.
It's one thing to sell it in the country to each other, but we're just passing money back and forth, and that's not how you create wealth.
He also agrees that non-native people shouldn't be allowed to kill sea otters. He says laxer rules could allow businesses to squeeze out Alaska Native artists.
When people talk about opening it up to more people, all I see is another thing that's been taken away from my people.
But Ware, the Petersburg artist, says he sympathizes with crabbers and dive fishermen who say that higher otter populations are weighing on fisheries. He emphasized that he doesn't want to pit fishermen and native hunters and artists against each other.
We sense the frustration. Alaska Natives utilize the shrimp and crab, you know, as a part of our subsistence foods and our traditional and customary foods for millennia. We don't want to see the crab or shrimp disappearing any more than anyone else.
Back in her brightly lit studio, surrounded by fur-draped mannequins and old sewing machines, Ruby, the Ketchikan artist, says she agrees. She thinks the answer lies in more aggressive support for native hunters, and maybe even more communication with crabbers and fishermen about where they're seeing the otters move.
It's a no-brainer when it comes to actually making something happen, but we just don't get the full cooperation from everybody.
The bottom line, she says, is that policymakers concerned about the impacts of otter populations should focus their efforts on increasing the capacity of existing hunters and craftspeople. She says a Southeast Alaska tannery, for instance, would allow her to process more hides and cut down on considerable shipping costs.
Because there's no tannery quality tannery here. We have a few tanneries, but they don't put out the quality that people really want to use.
She says hunters, crabbers, and dive fishermen all have the same goal, and they should work together. Reporting in Ketchikan, I'm Reagan Miller.
The Pacific Marine Heat Wave, nicknamed the Blob, devastated Alaska's marine ecosystem between 2014 and 2016. It turned sea stars into goo and caused dead seabirds to wash up on beaches. Researchers believe it led to the death of almost half of the resident humpback whales in Glacier Bay and the Icy Strait region of southeast Alaska. It was one of the longest marine heat waves to ever hit the Gulf of Alaska, but wildlife biologist Janet Nielsen with the Glacier Bay National Park says things are looking up for southeast humpback whales as temperatures return to normal.
The good news is that whales are very resilient. They are really capable of rebounding.
Southeast Alaska is an important feeding ground for humpbacks. They fuel up there before returning to winter breeding grounds in Hawaii and Mexico. But the heat wave caused an underwater famine that may have killed almost half the regular whales in Glacier Bay and Icy Strait. Fortunately, the 2022 humpback whale monitoring update released last week by the park shows sure signs of improvement.
We're seeing whales looking like they're in better body condition. We're seeing less emaciated whales, less skinny whales.
Whales are staying in Glacier Bay and Icy Strait for longer, too, which probably means more plentiful food. Still, birth rates have not returned to normal. Scientists are not sure exactly why, but Nielsen says that may mean that female whales have not recovered enough nutrition.
A lot of females that we would expect to have calves, they're just not coming back with calves. We're not sure what's the problem there. It could be that they're just not in good enough body condition to support a pregnancy.
And for adult whales, the threat of vessel strikes still looms. 2022's survey documented at least one death of an adult female whale near Angoon from a ship strike. The report cites the increasing number of whale-watching boats in southeast as a concern as well. Too much boat activity can stress humpbacks, which makes proper feeding even more difficult.
Today's KMXT local news is brought to you in part by Discover Kodiak, a one-stop source for visitor information on Kodiak and other destinations around the state. On the web at kodiak.org and at the Visitor Center in the Ferry Terminal Building at 100 Marine Way, 486-4782.
Mortgage applications are up. I'm Nova Safa with the Marketplace Minute. Mortgage applications rose 3% last week as mortgage rates fell. The Mortgage Bankers Association is pointing to the banking crisis as the reason. The average rate for a 30-year fixed interest rate home loan was just below 6.5% last week. Los Angeles-based Pacific Western Bank, focused on business clients, which include startups, says it has secured additional funding to stabilize its finances. PacWest says it has more than $11 billion in cash, exceeding the amount of uninsured deposits in its accounts. Ukraine has secured nearly $16 billion in loans from the International Monetary Fund to help plug the government's budget deficit and support post-war reconstruction. I'm Nova Safo with the Marketplace Minute.
It's a tough time, but each of us can make a difference in the lives of Alaskans. All you have to do is give via Pick, Click, Give by supporting Alaska's nonprofits when you apply for your PFD. You aren't just donating. You're giving more opportunity, more hope, more chances. You're changing the lives of Alaskans with the click of a button. Don't forget to Pick, Click, Give when you fill out your PFD application this year.
This is the Island Messenger, a look at personal messages, the weather, and community announcements.
Good afternoon and welcome to your Island Messenger for Wednesday. It is the 22nd day of 2023. The sun rose today at 8:05 this morning and it will set again at 8:28 this evening. That will give us 12 hours and 23 minutes of glorious daylight, a gain of 5 minutes and 1 second compared to yesterday. A record high for this date was 49 degrees set in 1915, then again in 1982, and a record low is 3 degrees set in chilly 1975. Currently 37 degrees in Kodiak under a light rain. There is 89% humidity at the airport and north winds to 14 miles per hour, as well as 10 miles of visibility. Well, the weather you see today may depend on where you are on the island. There is a winter weather advisory, mostly for areas to the south and west, from Old Harbor stretching all the way around to Larsen Bay. Communities along the western and southern portions of Kodiak Island, including Larsen Bay, Karlik, Akyuk, and Old Harbor, can expect blowy conditions, 50-mile-per-hour winds perhaps, and up to 4 inches of snow. Here around Kodiak City, though, they are calling for rain and snow showers, high near 37 today, northeast winds to 15, gusting to 20. No snow accumulations expected this afternoon here in town. For tonight, snow showers before 10 p.m., areas of blowing snow, low around 21 overnight tonight, with west winds to 25, gusting to 30. New snow accumulation tonight of maybe an inch is possible. For tomorrow, areas of blowing snow until 1 p.m., mostly sunny skies otherwise tomorrow with a high near 37 and west winds to 20, gusting to 25. Look for mostly cloudy skies Thursday and Friday, going to partly sunny Saturday and Sunday. Looking at our local tides, we have a high tide coming up at 3:25 this afternoon here on the east side. That will be a 9.1-foot tide, followed by a low tide at 9:27 this evening of minus 7/10. Over on the west side, your high tide will happen at 3:57 p.m., just about 4, and be 15.4 feet in Larsen Bay, followed by a low tide at 10:08 this evening of minus 1.2 feet. Mariners, here is your forecast for Marmot Island to Sitkanak, out to 15 miles offshore. Gale warning through tomorrow. West winds to 45 knots, except north of Dangerous Cape, southeast 30, becoming northeast 20 in the afternoon. Seas to 13 feet today on our east side. For tonight, west 45, except northwest 30 north of Dangerous Cape. Seas to 13 feet with freezing spray. For tomorrow, west wind to 35 knots, diminishing to 25 in the afternoon. Seas to 9 feet with freezing spray. For offshore waters on our east side, 15 to 85 miles offshore, storm warning today. West wind to 50 knots, except south 30 north of Dangerous Cape, seas to 18 feet, building to 24 feet in the afternoon, way offshore. For tonight, west 45, except northwest 30 north of Dangerous Cape, seas to 24 feet. And for tomorrow, from 15 to 85 miles off our west or east side, northwest 40, seas to 17 feet. Over in the Shelikof Strait, look for a gale warning for tonight. North 30 today, seas to 7 feet. For tonight, northwest 35, seas to 9 feet with freezing spray. And for tomorrow on our west side, west 30, seas to 7 feet with freezing spray. The Kodiak Harvest Food Cooperative is having its annual meeting. That will take place Saturday, April 1st. At the Kodiak Baptist Mission Heritage Center. There will be a vendor market from 4 to 5, and the meeting will be conducted from 5 to 6. There will be a silent dessert auction from 4 to 6. Live music by Ellamy Tiller and light refreshments will be served. All are welcome, but you must be a KHFC member to vote in the Board of Director election. And again, Kodiak Harvest Food Cooperative, April 1st, that's a Saturday, starting at 4 p.m. Senior citizens of Kodiak will be holding their regularly scheduled board meeting next Wednesday, March 29th at 1 p.m. in the Senior Center's multipurpose room. The public is invited to attend. For more information, call the Kodiak Senior Center at 907-486-6181. The Shakespeares are having a showcase. The four-time Division I champion in drama, Kodiak Shakespeares. They are featuring the award-winning Reader's Theater performance of The Tragedy of the Scandies Rose. That's happening Friday, March 24th, and Saturday, March 25th at 7 p.m. in the Gerald C. Wilson Auditorium Drama Pod. Only a $10 admission at the door, and you can also go to shakespeares.ludos.com. But again, that's Friday and Saturday, 7 p.m., the Drama Pod. Kodiak Arts Council's Arts and Adventure Auction is happening on the 1st as well. It's the 32nd annual Arts and Adventure Auction. It's happening at the Afognak Center on Near Island, Saturday, April 1st, starting at 6 p.m. The event features live and silent auctions with more than 100 items, including fabulous art, travel adventures, fishing charters, local seafood, jewelry, health and beauty packages, pretty much everything. Doors open at 6, auction starts at 7. Again, that's the Afognak Center on Near Island, Saturday, April 1st. Join Kodiak College and the Kodiak Chamber of Commerce for a special business after hours event. From pickleball to painting, cannibal math, jeans, gaming, comedy, learning to fly, or learning to lift a fingerprint, join the March Mini Mashup event, Friday, March 31st, 4:30 to 7:30 p.m. You'll be able to ask questions about degree planning in the mini advising sessions, learn about financing your college career, take fun mini classes, meet professors, participate in a campus-wide scavenger hunt, visit the Community Education Art Show, and enjoy complimentary appetizers and drinks. That all happens starting at 4:30 p.m. on Friday, March 31st at Kodiak College. The Kodiak Island Borough and Assembly will be having a special budget work session on Saturday at 9 a.m. in the Assembly Chambers. Agenda items include submission of the FY 2024 budget and capital program to the Assembly by the Kodiak Island Borough and general budget discussions. Also, Kodiak Island Borough School District budget funding discussion will occur. That's all happening Saturday, 9 a.m. in the Assembly Chambers. And the Kodiak Island Borough Assembly and School District Board joint work session is occurring Thursday. That's going on in the School District Conference Room at 6:30 p.m. with the Borough chairing.
Listen for the Island Messenger here on Public Radio KMXT three times a day, Monday through Friday at 9 a.m., during the Midday Report at 12:20, and in the evening at 7 o'clock. If you have a community announcement or personal message, including lost and found items or pets, you can call KMXT at 486-3181, fax us at 486-2733, or email psa@kmxt.org.